I can see why you'd resent that. Just trying to be positive, though, the whole reason she's here is because you go back in time at some point in the future and become her. So you will get to build the city, and you do get to try all of your ideas, and eventually you will get the credit.
Britt turned, looked at Philip, and said,
Please, Philip, don't be so positive. It's not becoming for people like us.
Which got a small laugh out of Philip. She continued,
And when I do go back and build, I won't really be designing and building. I'll be copying what was here when I got here. I'll be copying from her.
But if she's you...
Then who am I copying? Who designed Atlantis in the first place? I don't know, but I do know that it wasn't me. And really, that's all I care about right now.
Philip started to say something, but Britt put a finger across his lips to silence him. She smiled, but with firmness in her tone, she said,
And frankly, I'm talking about someone I can't stand. If the best thing you can think of to cheer me up is to tell me that I'll be just like her someday, I suggest that you probably shouldn't bother.
Philip smiled and nodded. Britt took her finger away. They rode in silence as strange, colorful sea creatures swam past. Britt piloted the bubble over a tall stand of coral, and before them a vista of brightly colored shapes stretched on as far as they could see. Britt said,
So, Philip, you haven't had much to say about the reef. What do you think?
It's very nice, Philip said.
He looked around a bit, then added,
Pretty.
Britt looked at him, a smile slowly growing on her face. She bit her lip, then turned her attention to the control panel in front of her. She scrolled through more menu options before looking back up to Philip.
Okay, Phil. I've shown you something pretty. Now how would you like to see something really cool?
Yes, please.
Britt tapped the controls and everything went black. Philip's eyes strained to adjust to the light, but there was no light to adjust to. After a second or two, he saw the control panel emit a subtle glow.
Where are we?
Philip whispered.
Very, very deep.
Britt answered in an equally hushed tone.
Why are we whispering?
Philip asked.
I don't know. You started it.
She whispered, then added in a more conversational tone,
Nothing can hear us while we're inside this sphere.
Philip surveyed the vista around them.
I can see why you brought me here. This is definitely the darkest dark I've ever seen.
Britt said,
Just wait, it gets better.
As she hit a few buttons, and the darkness around them flashed and took on a greenish glow. What had looked like nothing but a solid field of black was now a vast three-dimensional galaxy of faint, light green stars drifting slowly around them.
What happened? Philip asked.
I set the sphere to filter the infrared spectrum so that it's visible to us. Also, the sphere is emitting infrared, or else there still wouldn't be anything to see down here.
Why is it all green?
Philip asked.
Because it looks cool that way. Kinda night vision-y. I can change it if you like.
No,
Philip said.
Please leave it. What are all of these things floating around us?
Debris, dead krill, fish poop. I don't know, to be honest. They're not what we came to see.
What did we come to see?
Britt smiled.
We'll get to that in a minute. First, Gwen tells me you're from the 80s, right?
Yes.
Tell me, what do you know about giant squid?
Huh,
Philip said, thinking.
Giant squid. Let's see. Sailors used to tell stories about them, most likely to impress other sailors. They used to draw them on maps. They made a really cool mechanical one for the movie 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Britt hit a button, and the dots of light that surrounded them started to move in unison, and all in the same direction, telling Philip that the craft was moving. The effect was much like driving in a snowstorm, or how Philip imagined flying in an extremely fast spaceship would look.
Are they real?
Britt asked, then added,
Giant squids?
No,
Philip said.
I mean, I've read stuff about big tentacles washing up on beaches, but that's mostly tabloid stuff. I'd guess they're no more real than the Loch Ness Monster, or Bigfoot.
Yeah,
Britt said.
Probably. Say, what's that?
She pointed straight ahead. At first, Philip didn't see what she meant. He squinted, and in the distance he saw a ghostly image of something. Something graceful and fluid. It almost looked like an immense snake reaching out for them.
Maybe an eel, Philip thought.
It was getting closer, or to be more accurate, they were gaining on it. As whatever it was came clearer, Philip could see that it wasn't an eel. At the very least, it was several eels swimming together. As they drew even closer, Philip saw some dark mass ahead of the things, whatever they were.
Were they chasing it?
No,
Philip could see now.
They're part of it. It can't be,
Philip said.
It is,
Britt replied.
It's Bigfoot.
Britt maneuvered the craft out from behind the giant squid, accelerating to come up alongside of it.
Cool, isn't it?
She asked.
Yes, very. In a ghastly sort of way. The way the tentacles move, it's almost hypnotic.
Philip watched for a moment, then asked,
Did you make it?
No,
Britt said.
It's real. One of the girls is into marine biology. When she found out about this craft and what it can do, she went off in search of all the coolest things she'd ever read about. We've got them all cataloged so we can come check them out any time. It's better than any aquarium.
Its eye is bigger than my head, Philip said. It can't see us, can it?
No, it can't see or hear us. It has no idea we're here.
Good.
They kept pace with the squid, watching in silence as it barreled through the dark. After a long silence, Philip said,
Britt, I haven't known you long, but I've been thinking about your situation.
Britt laughed.
Philip, we're deep below the surface of the sea, looking at a creature that until 5 minutes ago you thought was a myth, and you want to talk about me?
What can I say?
Philip said.
I just find some things particularly interesting.
In the low light, Philip couldn't be sure that she had blushed, but he chose to believe that she had.
Look, he said. We know that we're in a computer program, and knowing that allows us to play around with it to do things. Make things, fly, travel through time, that sort of thing. But, Britt, none of us knows how the program really works. We tell ourselves that we do, but really we just understand bits of it. We think we know what happened when you came to Atlantis for the first time, but really we have no idea how the program handled it. We just know what your experience of it was.
Philip paused a moment to give Britt a chance to tell him to shut up. She didn't, so he continued.
You're thinking of it as if your life has been an unbroken thread that just happens to loop back around on itself. But what if it's not? What if you are the end of the thread, like the rest of us?
But Philip, Britt the Elder is here. You can't ignore her. Believe me, I've tried. She's here, she's me, and she remembers everything I do.
Or so it would seem,
Philip said.
But what if, the instant you got the idea to go further back in time and create Atlantis yourself, if you had to, the program, whatever it is, took that to be the plan? Then, when you transported, it triggered the plan you had created, like a subroutine. So the program paused our reality.
Can it do that? Britt asked.
I don't know. I don't see why it couldn't. And if it did, we'd never know. So anyway, it pauses reality and creates a second copy of you, which then runs through a projected version of events, seeing that there's nothing here, treading water for a few minutes, presumably, then going back in time and creating the city. Then the program blasts through a thumbnail version of the past, what, 100 years? Then, when it has the past laid out, it restarts the program and you turn up for the first time, from your point of view.
Britt shook her head.
Maybe. But I don't see how that makes any difference. And besides, that doesn't explain how she remembers everything I've done.
Yes, it does. And it makes all of the difference, It means that you're the real you, and she's an imitation, created as a placeholder until the real thing is ready to take over, and her memories are being created on the fly by the program to reflect her past, which you're creating now. You've been thinking the things she's done affect you, but in truth, the things you do affect her. She's just a puppet you, being changed constantly to reflect the actions you've taken, or are likely to take. Her past actions didn't create you. Your current actions create her.
Britt thought about it, then asked,
"That explains how she remembers the things I've thought and done, but what about when she predicts the things that are going to happen to me?"
Philip shrugged.
"Maybe it's the power of suggestion. You believe she knows your future, so when she says something's going to happen, you make it happen. I don't know. The good news is you're not doomed to be just like her if you don't want to be. Britt, you can become anything you like, and she will change to reflect your choices. If I'm right, you have more control over her than she does over you."
"That is good news,"
Britt said quietly, as if not wanting to be overheard.
"What's the bad news? There is bad news, I assume."
Philip took a deep breath.
"There's always bad news. If I'm right, you can die."
"Which is why you're so worried that someone is trying to kill me."
"Yes."
They were both so absorbed in the implications of their discussion that they nearly didn't notice the hollow popping noise, like a champagne bottle being uncorked. A shrill, brittle, tearing sound surrounded them as the diamond sphere that kept Philip and Britt safe and dry was clouded by thousands of tiny spiderweb cracks. They had just enough time to realize what was happening, then see the looks of panic on each other's faces before the sphere catastrophically imploded. For any ordinary person, the implosion of a deep-sea submersible is an instant death. The violence of the event and the pressures involved will completely destroy the human body faster than its nervous system can register a single pain signal. Death is immediate and certain, like someone turning off a switch marked U. Philip was not an ordinary person. He was a subroutine in a computer-generated reality, and he knew it. As such, he had made modifications to his parameters. Philip was badly stunned. He drifted in the water, his whole body screaming. He was impervious to physical damage, but the implosion had felt like being hit by a speeding car from every possible direction simultaneously. Normally, on the surface, he would take a few moments to recover from this. Philip was not on the surface. He was deep under the ocean, and while the pressure was not killing him, it certainly wasn't making him comfortable. Philip regained some small portion of his senses. He tried to look around, but there was no light this far down, and he no longer had the sphere to create and convert infrared light into something his eyes could use. All he saw was, literally, a sea of blackness in every direction. The cold was not an issue. Philip's modifications to his own statistics left him with a constant, comfortable temperature, regardless of the ambient conditions. So that was a victory. The oxygen situation was less positive. They had found ways to make people not need oxygen, but they hadn't found a way to make them not feel like they need oxygen. So the unlucky few who had tried this modification, or had it tried on them, spent the entire time feeling like they were suffocating, even though they were not. This was deemed so horrific that no wizard he knew of had ever chosen to keep that modification installed. So Philip needed air, and there was no way he could swim to the surface in time. Because of the darkness and the pressure, he didn't feel like he was drowning. He felt like he was buried alive under a mountain of water, which was not an improvement. Philip flailed about helplessly. He was down far too deep to have any hope of swimming to the surface. He had no light, he had no air. He wasn't thinking in rational sentences, or even words, just fast, panicked images, one of which was of his staff waiting for him back at Britt's home. It was too long to fit in the sphere, so he'd left it. Without it, the shell program he'd mostly invented would not recognize him as a wizard and would not let him teleport to safety. It was meant to be a failsafe to keep the wrong people from using magic. Luckily, after the scare they'd all had 2 months ago, he had developed an emergency backup, a collapsible metal pointer that he'd modified to extend to the proper length for the shell to recognize it as a wand. All he had to do was pull it out, extend it, not make the obvious joke, and use his last breath to say the right spell, and he'd be back at home, safe. He knew that it wasn't possible to talk in any meaningful way underwater, but as long as his lungs expelled some air and his mouth and vocal cords formed the words, he was hopeful that the shell would recognize the incantation. Hopeful was the word. He jammed his right hand into his pocket, searching for the pointer. He swept his left hand in wide arcs with his fingers extended. If he could get a good grip on Brit, he could teleport them both to safety, but he needed to find her first. He hadn't had the chance to take a good deep breath before the implosion, and even if he had, the violence of it would have knocked most of the wind out of him anyway. His lungs were already aching. The pointer was easy enough to find in his pocket, but drifting underwater, it was surprisingly difficult to pull it out of his loose robe's large pocket. Every time he tried to pull his hand out of the pocket moved with his hand. Finally, after several tries, he suspended his left arm's search for Brit and sent it to assist his right arm. He grabbed the outside of the pocket with one hand, yanking the pointer out with the other. He quickly extended the pointer, then started whipping his arms around wildly in a desperate attempt to find Brit. His lungs were on fire, but he did not want to leave without her. His movements got more and more frantic. Finally, he realized that if he didn't get out of there soon, he wouldn't get out of there at all. His arms had yet to make contact with anything that might be another person. He was very quickly reaching decision time when he felt something grab his left foot. For the first time since the implosion, actual words popped into his mind. "Oh God," he thought, "it's the squid!" Philip pictured himself materializing back at home with a 50-foot, angry, dying squid. He didn't like what he saw. He jerked his leg upward, but it was held tight. He couldn't shake the squid off. He knew that squid or no squid, he needed air now. He drew up his other leg to make one desperate attempt to kick himself free. He looked down, towards his captured leg, and at first he thought he was hallucinating from the lack of oxygen. His eyes struggled to focus and adjust, but submerged in murky water without goggles, his vision was only going to be so clear. Still, blurry though it was, Philip definitely saw light beneath him. He stopped struggling and saw that it was not the squid that had his left foot, it was Brit. She had his foot jammed into the crook of her right arm, and the index finger of her left hand was glowing. They briefly made eye contact. Brit stabbed her glowing finger at a floating button that only she could see, and the two of them disappeared.